Welcome back to another amazing episode of the Good Advice Podcast. You're tuning in to the best place to learn how to grow and scale your business. Whether you're new on this journey or you've been like, you know, many of us on this journey for a while and you're thinking, man, this is a little difficult. This can be a little bit tough. You're in good company because we're going to be talking about the actionable, practical steps that you can take to grow your business. Now, today's episode, I'm going to go ahead and say it. It's one of my favorites. I love having people on the podcast who tell an honest story about entrepreneurship. And when I say an honest story, it's not the dressed up, prettied up version that people put on social media. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of hard work and effort to get your business to a successful place. Today we have Eyal Galico on the podcast. He's the owner of Apollo IT Services. He's an amazing business owner, and we have an incredible conversation about how he started his business, what we need to know about cybersecurity today, and how that old favorite password of yours may not be a very good password at all. All that and more is on today's show. But before we dive in, we have a word from one of the amazing businesses that is so kind to sponsor this podcast. Stay tuned. And if you like the podcast and you want to support the podcast, you can always go to our Patreon, patreon.com/goodadvice. Again, we so appreciate you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. There's one single piece of advice that I give to business owners who are ready to scale their business drastically, and that's knowing exactly what you need to hand off so that you can continue focusing on what you're an expert in. It amazes me when I talk to business owners who are doing their own bookkeeping and tax prep, and worse, that they're going through all this paperwork at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, even midnight, slaving away trying to make sense of all of the numbers for their business. Business owners who are making it happen have already figured out that you can't do it all yourself. That's why I recommend Steve Lay with Equity Business Solutions. Not only is he an expert in bookkeeping and tax prep, but what I love about Steve is that he'll sit down with you and help you make sense of the value of your business beyond just reading a spreadsheet. You'll be able to make better decisions, and more importantly, you're going to save yourself the crucial time you would have spent going through QuickBooks or an Excel spreadsheet or whatever it is that keeps us up late at night. So save yourself some time and some money by giving Steve Lay a call at Equity Business Solutions, and he'll show you the value beyond your numbers. Go to equitybusinesssolutionsllc.com to find out more. Galico, thank you for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, Martin Black, for having me.
It's such a pleasure to have you on the show. You know, we've seen each other around at different networking events.
Yeah.
And, you know, are you an Austin native? Are you from Austin?
No, I'm originally from Israel. I moved here, let me see now, it's almost like 14 and a half years ago. I moved here for a job position with one of Apple's subsidiaries. So Apple Computers, everybody knows them. They don't operate in a small town, so they hand off the business to a reseller. So I work for one of them, came here for a working visa and work as an operation manager for one of the vendors, and then moved to Austin.
So you've been in the States for 15 years?
Oh, like 14, 14 and a half, I think.
Okay. How do you like it?
I'm still here, so I still like it, definitely.
Was there any like culture shock? Like, was there anything that like you were surprised about?
You have no idea. So first of all, I talk with my hands. I know it sounds stressful.
Well, and I told, just for our listeners, I told Galico to make sure he doesn't hit the table we're on because the microphones will pick it up. I'd say be as animated as you want.
We'll
fix it if we need
to. So the first year, like, you know, I talk with my hands. People like, Americans are very, you know, like 3 feet of personal space.
And yeah,
in Europe or Middle East, it's not very common. People are like very more touchy, I want to say, right?
Yeah,
so
okay.
For me, that was like a unique experience. You know, people is like very reserved here. Like, oh, we don't know you. Like, how do you make friends? So definitely, I think the first year was really hard for me. Making friends, going to social events. People is like, oh, just go hang out for a beer, coffee. People is like, I don't know you. I'm like, hence, let's go out and hang out together. And yeah, it's a bit different culture here.
So you came, you were living in Austin. Now I know you're running Apollo IT Services. When did the transition happen to where you were like, I'm going to start my own business?
So I moved to USA. I moved to a small city called College Station.
Yeah. Which is actually funny enough, when you first came in, Jennifer, she's from College Station.
Oh, yeah. So I lived over there for 4 years, three and a half, something like that. Then we moved to Austin with my wife. Moved to Austin in 2013, 14, just beginning. And then there was like a mini crisis in the IT industry over there. Worked for a bunch of companies. At some point, I'm like, I'm not getting to where I want to be. I'm not utilizing my full expertise and knowledge. I'm going to take the dive and open my own shop. And, you know, like I had my business plan. It's like, oh, I'm going to make so much money. I'm going to be busy so many hours.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it literally went down the toilet like a few months later because this is not feasible. Like, I can't imagine like doing all these hours, like not work. But definitely, I want to say the first year was rough. I worked, so the first year and a half, I worked two jobs. I worked for a call center from 4 o'clock in the morning till 10 a.m. And then from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., I worked on my business until I made enough money to provide salary and the business operation. So that was my first year and a half, years.
I love those origin stories of like where you're just grinding. I was talking to someone yesterday who she was talking about her business and she was like, well, I work 9 to 5, so I can't do the business. And I was like, if you really want to do the business, you'll find a way.
I work 80 to 90 hours a week the first 2 years.
Which a lot of people are surprised to hear that because we joked when we first came in before we hit record because we were talking to someone who was thinking about starting her own business. And a lot of people, they think what you're talking about of, I'll start my own business. I'll work half the hours and I'll make all this money. And then you actually get into it.
It goes in reverse. You work double the hours to half the money.
Yes. Yes. So why were you, what kept you going in that first year and a half? Like, why were you putting yourself through that?
I knew I can make it. You just need to keep grinding. Like you get 100 no's and you get one yes, but you need to network like crazy.
Yeah.
I know it sounds bad, but literally networking is like where it gives me all my clients. Network like crazy. You need to put your name out. You need to, what differentiate you from other people, right? And especially as an IT person that most of the industry is introverts, I'm an extrovert. So people is like, what? You're IT? Like, how come you're like outspoken? You're out in the networking? I'm like, well, I guess that's my superpower. Like being an IT, an extrovert in IT. People look at me like unheard of. Like, really?
I don't know the IT industry, but just as like an outsider, I would say that that's a great advantage for you.
It is.
I have the same, or that's my assumed stereotype of the IT world is being more introverted, being more reserved.
It is correct. It's not a stereotype. It is correct. Most IT people are introvert. They live in a small world. I mean, I don't say everybody like that, but most of them are, you know, introvert. It is what it is. And then it's funny because when I talk to my business coach at some point, I'm like, hey, I want to hire someone, maybe a salesperson. She's like, absolutely not. You didn't just hire another tech. You can be the salesperson. You're just literally out and about every day and you can sell your business better than everybody else. Just, you don't need a salesperson. You can just hire a tech. And that's what we did at some point.
Was it hard for your, because a lot of people listening, maybe they've started a business or they're trying to grow the business. And one of their pain points is, you know, you're doing the 80 hour weeks. It takes longer than we often think to like create the momentum for our business. What was it like with your family or like your wife specifically? Like, how did you keep?
So this is a conversation you need to have with your spouse, partner, it is like you are not going to make enough money in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like if you are a single parent or a single person, you're going to have to haggle it around. Like a friend of mine opened a business. He worked at Uber driver after hours just to make them ends meet. You not going to make enough money from your business in the beginning. You need to know that and accept that until you get some recognition and name. You need to find another way of income, right? You're going to work like crazy. You're going to work your behind you off to put food on your table. And in this case, I told my wife, listen, the first year, I'm not going to enough money. I mean, I worked, this is why I worked two jobs in the first year and a half just to support myself and my business somehow until I made enough money to pull salary and the business operation. But you need to grind like crazy the first 2 years. Like this is why 90% of businesses don't make it past the first year and another 5 fail the year after that. The people that make it past 5 is like 3%.
I think you're right. I mean, I talk to a lot of people who they aren't willing to pay the price. And I don't think necessarily even has to be like, if someone starts a business and it takes off, I'm happy for them. I don't think you have to grind in the sense of like, you have to earn it.
Yeah.
I mean, you do have to earn it, but not everyone's going to have the same story. But here's what I will say is I have found like in the digital or the entrepreneurial world, especially like digital entrepreneurship, like someone selling something online, is that a lot of people don't have the appetite for that in the sense of they think entrepreneurship is really a get rich quick method. I remember I talked to a guy who, a younger guy, probably in his early 20s, and he's like, man, I so badly want to own my own business. And he was like, I just so badly want this. And I said, well, why? Like, tell me, why do you want this? And he's like, well, because I'll be able to sleep in as late as I want and I won't have a boss. And I was like,
oh boy,
bro, you are in
ruined
big,
wake up.
Yes.
And it's different. Like social media or digital world does put a lot of people into excess, but also the competition is fierce. Mm. And the number of people that think they can make money out of social media is crazy, but the numbers are very, very small. If you want to make serious money, like you need to make like millions of views. Like you see, like there was a raffle now in YouTube that changed the rules how to get money. Unless you have like over a million views, like you barely make $1,000. So for example, it's hard to make living on social media. Very, very few makes it. And depending on industry, cosmetics is a big one. A lot of people do cosmetics, hairstyles. It's very common over there. That's a way to make money. But to be a content creator, it's super hard, right?
And I think
consistent. Like it's your business, your podcast, right? You need to be on top of that every time, and it takes a lot of time and effort.
And I think a lot of people sometimes as entrepreneurs or wantrepreneurs, like people who want to be entrepreneurs, they are misled by someone's, like there was a guy, I remember, I've told this story on the podcast a lot. There was a guy who talked about how like over 6 months he made it big as like a digital creator. Well, he had been doing it for 10 years, but he didn't say that part of the story, you know, because what gets clicks is I started it and made a ton. So like, for example, one of the things that I do now with Good Advice is podcast consulting where people want to start a podcast. And it's just always funny when I tell people, when they say like, what's the road to monetization? And we've made probably around like $30,000 on just like ad revenue with the podcast. And so they ask me, well, what's the pathway to monetization? Well, the pathway is that I recorded every week for 3 years, you know, or I'm in year 5 of the podcast.
It's hard to be consistent in this one. It's hard to be consistent. I'll tell you, like I'm a mountain biker. I have my own YouTube channel that I record videos. It's easy to record. Editing, doing the sound effects, it's just like horrendous. At some point after a year, actually I dropped it because it just took so much time. And that's another thing you see with business owners. You come to open a business, being an entrepreneur, you have a skill set that you come with. But when you become a business owner, suddenly you need to be jack of all trade. Like, you know, like depending on what you do, inventory, finance is a big problem for a lot of business owner because let's say, I come from the tech industry and IT. Oh, I'm a great tech, but can I be a great business owner? Can I manage my own finance? Right. Mm. Like this is something that I see a lot of people that I consulted them is like, hey, like, how do you manage your finance? Like people, oh, I can be a great and you're great at your skill, but then your business failed because you neglected your finance. Like this is something that you need to learn how to do a lot of stuff, marketing, finance, being doing your own business, depending what it is. And this is where the book, The E-Myth, everybody heard about it.
Yeah.
You talk about it. Like you need to work, think about outside your business, not inside your business, right? It's very hard to come of that, especially in the IT industry. We see a lot of people are, well, I'm a tech. I'm a great tech. I can do it for everybody. Absolutely. You might be, but if you don't have a great communication skill, you're an introvert. How do you manage your finance? Do you bill enough for that? And this is where God knows how many times I saw people like a tech and like the first year, they're just like, I'm not charging enough. I can't charge enough. Like this is so much tech, so much time. Yes. Admin work takes 15 to 20% of your time managing your business. That's part of being a business owner.
Well, and I think you make a great insight. And I don't know how you feel about this, but we do this entrepreneurship meetup on Tuesday mornings. And something we were talking about this morning is how people, it's like the motivational quotes that people talk about with business and how it sometimes like oversimplifies business. And what I'm getting at is I was talking to someone the other day about this. We were at like this bigger meetup and it's the exact topic. He was having to manage all these parts of the business and someone else like grabbed one of those quotes, which was, you know, do what you're great at and then just hire people who can do the rest. But when you're starting your business,
you don't have the money for that.
Exactly.
That's
and that's kind of what gets, I don't want to say gets on my nerves, because I'm not mad about it. But sometimes I think we lose the nuance of actually growing a business. Mm, and yeah. So we were at this meetup and everybody was kind of ganging up on him being like, you got to hire someone to do that. You got to. And I was like, hang on, he doesn't have the cash flow to hire someone. Like, he's still so early that he has, I mean, as painful as it is to do the 60, 70, 80 hours a week, that's kind of what he, that's the position he's in right now.
That's how it goes. That's it.
Exactly. Like, it's how it goes.
You think I knew financing from the get-go? No, like, heck, I took like QuickBooks lessons. I sit with the bookkeeper, like,
yeah,
she grinded to me. Okay, this is why you do it. Like literally, I had to take classes on everything, on social media. The first website I built by myself, I spent 60 hours. I think it was on Squarespace. I think I built it. And then I spent a whole week, 60 hours, super happy about it. I have a friend, he's a developer. I ask him like, hey, Philip, do me a favor, check the website and just be honest with me. I'm very straightforward. Just tell me how it is. He came after a day. This is absolutely crap. You have to take it down. I just spent 60 hours the whole week trying to do this thing. And I'm like, okay, great. Tell me what do I need to fix and what do you do? I wasn't even offended. Like, and I just spent 60 hours on a week. Here's what you need to do. Spent another 60 hours, did another website, got 80% score. He gave me some feedback, fixed it, but that's pretty much it. I just spent 2 hours, 2 weeks building my website. Can I pay someone else to do that? Yes. I don't have the $5,000 to pay for that.
Yeah.
That's the thing. So I just had to learn a skill to do that. I learned how to manage my books, my social media, my financing, my marketing. Everything is a skill you need to learn from scratch.
And I think the value in that is when you do get to the position that you're hiring out for that, you know enough about it to know that you're getting your money's worth. Like, you're getting, it's like when you know enough about marketing or you've handled your books enough to like have at least a little bit of an insight. Then when you hire a company to manage it, you know enough to now check to make sure that it's being done the right way.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, there's, especially like in the marketing world and like the digital advertising and all this stuff, SEO, all these things that it's ambiguous enough that you could pay a lot of money on it and not get anything out of it. There's a lot of bad actors.
I've been there. Trust me, I've been. I don't know how many marketing companies I changed in the last 10 years. I've been here. Like, we've been in Arkansas for a year and a half. I'm currently on my fourth company. I mean, I'm very happy with them, but I changed four companies in a year and a half.
And when you're totally green on it, when you don't know anything about marketing, I think I was a little bit naive when I started my business because there were a lot of things I didn't know and I was very trusting. So like my first, I think I had about $15,000 set aside to start the business. Really, it was my wife's money, actually. Okay. It was her money set aside. And man, Gliga, I was so confident. And this is what's so funny about your story is I was like, and my wife's name's Joy. And I was like, we're going to make so much money. This is going to be so easy. Oh, this is going to be great. And it took 6 months before I got my first sale. I mean, it was a nightmare, but we had $15,000. She had $15,000. And I said, hey, I think I had five and she had 10. And I said, let me borrow this. It's going to be great. And she's like, you know, my husband said, of course, yeah, let's go ahead. Hired a marketer. It was a train wreck. I didn't know anything about marketing, so I didn't know what I didn't know.
Yeah.
And this person was not a good hire, was not a good person who was helpful at all.
Yeah.
But that put me in a very, this is why I think it pays to learn this stuff on your own a little bit, is because it put me in such a hard place then of playing catch up. You know, this $15,000 that could have stretched and been cash flow that I needed or cash reserves for those first 6 months. Instead, I spent it all like in a week.
That's brutal.
Oh man. And it's kind of a miracle in hindsight that good advice is still here 5 years later. Cause we had friends and we didn't have really any family, but we had friends who were letting us borrow money who were like, we'll help you with your rent. You know, I mean, just such kind people who thankfully saw something in me to be like, I trust you enough to let you borrow this.
That's nice.
And we've paid it all back since then. But,
I tell people you need to be jack of all trade, literally jack of all trade.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to juggle so many balls in the first 2 years of business.
I agree 100%.
And unless you get crazy investment, like, you're not going to spend the money outside. Like, it's like you need to keep your money like crazy. Spend it smartly, I want to say.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, you don't know what you don't know. That's the thing. Like, think that I know everything? Shoot, absolutely not. Like, I don't know a lot about marketing. I hire a company. God knows how many mistakes I made. Like, you know, we had four companies here in Bentonville in the last year and a half. Now with one company that we are very happy, Call Up Design in Rogers.
Yeah.
Doing great jobs for us.
Brittany's company, yeah.
But it took us some time to fund them and see like, okay, now that after I went three companies, I'm like, oh, we can do this for you. And then like, okay, where's the result? Like everybody will sell you a mountain, but will deliver a tiny mound.
Mm.
And I see it a lot with a lot of vendors and services. I always tell people like, they will sell you the mother and sister and you'll maybe get like a tiny, I don't know, popsicle out of this thing. Like it's really like everybody will oversell you, but I tell people like, don't oversell, undersell, or overdeliver, and then the result will be absolutely amazing.
I try to be, there's a guy who came on the podcast named Todd Capone, and he's a big sales guy out of New York. And one thing that he, his whole sales process is on transparency and being really honest from the get-go, what you're good at and what you're not good at. And that when you do that from the start, it weeds out customers that wouldn't have been good customers for you anyway.
Yeah.
But it also, it keeps you from falling into that trap of over-delivering, because I don't know how much you're on social media, but social media is full of over-promising.
Oh, and tell me about it. I know.
I mean,
that's actually a funny story. So one of our first clients in Austin, that's a lady. So I'm Israeli. Like, we are pretty straightforward. No, we don't do politically correct or BS very much. Like, I'm just, no. So one of the ladies that it was one of our first client, I told her in the email, like, okay, here's our services. And I told her in the bottom, like, PS, I don't do politically correct or BS very good. If there's a problem, you tell me to my face. I have a thick skin. You're not going to insult me. If I screw something, I need to know about it immediately. I promise you I'll fix that. And then I get the email back and she just circled this whole sentence. This is why I hire you. And I was like, okay. And you're right. Being honest, like, don't everybody, especially in the first few years of the business, like, you'll do whatever it takes to get clients, right? Sometimes you'll like sell promises like crazy. And this is the hard part. Like, you want clients. You'll take anybody to be your clients, even if it's a good fit or not, because you want the money, right? But are they good clients for you, right? Are they good fit? Probably in the first few years, everybody's going to be your client, right? Just you learn and own your process. Like, okay, how do I filter that? Is this a good client for me?
And I think you find out, like, I think you have like your general skill set and then you really figure out like what your sweet spot is.
Yeah.
Cause I think those early customers, a lot of times it's like, yeah, I can do that. You know, cause you'll have customers who they come to you and they don't necessarily need what you offer, but they need you to do something that's somewhat related. And they're like, hey, by the way, can you do this? And like you said, I mean, the cash, you need the cash.
Absolutely.
And for our listeners, I don't mean this in a like malicious, you're not lying to anyone being like, yeah, I can replace your roof. You've never been on a roof in your life. You know, it's, you've done enough to feel good about it. Like, yeah. I think I can do that. And so you sell the service and then you realize after the fact, I didn't know enough about that. I wasn't as familiar as I thought I was, you know, what have you. And then over the years you really get good at exactly what is your sweet spot.
Yeah. And that's correct. You just like, you learn, like, I think in 2019, just in transition, we did a house cleaning in Austin. We had to quote unquote lay off some clients. And, you know, we just suppose, you know, we look at how much work they need from us. Do they actually listen to us? Take our advice. We do offer advice on cybersecurity. It is important. If someone doesn't care about cybersecurity for their business, then there's nothing we can force them. Like, you can bring the host to the turf, but if you can't force him to drink.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And we did some house cleaning. We let off a couple of clients, some big ones. And they're like, are you letting us go? And I'm like, actually, I do. Yes. We're not a good fit. And they were like super surprised. I mean, they're paying like $1,000 per month, $1,000 per month. And I'm like, listen, you don't listen to our advice. You do the same problems. We have the same problems again and again. I'm trying to educate you, give you better solutions. You don't want to execute it? That's fine. Find another IT provider. And they were so surprised, so offended that them that pay us for services, we let them go. But I mean, that this one client was generating almost 20% of my tickets.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, is it worth the time, the effort? No, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you do the same thing again and again and expect different result, you won't, right? Like, our main goal is to educate, right? A lot of people can do in IT and cybersecurity. You need to listen to your consultant, right? Like, usually we come from a field that we know what's happening over there. Most of our advice, we consult you. Like, we don't force you to do that, but you pay us for knowledge, right? You don't pay us because we have a gorgeous eyebrows. Like, that doesn't work like that. if you don't listen to our advice, then why hire us at the beginning?
That's it. Yeah, and I think it's a good insight too, because as you kind of figure out like your customer, who your customer is, I think also you start to realize not just who's a good customer on paper in terms of the revenue they provide you, but like you said, they listen to your recommendations. Because here's what's really interesting is, being in a consultant space, the number of businesses that will check the box in terms of like paying out funds to get someone to help, and yet they can't stop doing it the way they want to do it.
Yeah.
Right. And so it is that customer who's resistant to take your advice, who end up, and I don't know what your personality is, but for me, I have a hard time with a customer who I don't feel like we're making a really meaningful difference for. So like, I can't take the customer who will just pay the invoice and then not do anything. Like for me, there has to be a sense of momentum there.
You need some kind of interaction with the client. Clients need to know, because we want feedback. We did, hey, this is what I'm going to do for you. What do you think? Like, you want feedback? We're actually going to execute that. What's your prospect about it? Like, this is what we expect from you after 3, 6, and 9 months to do and happen. And if you don't listen, then like, again, like, we trying to protect your business. Very simple. We put the barriers around your business, educate your users. If no one wants to listen, like, there is nothing we can do about it. Like, again, it's cybercrime. IT is already tough. AI makes it even tenfold harder for us right now.
Yeah, and you've shared a couple of things at a couple of networking events that have really resonated with me. And I think part of the reason this has resonated with me, because one of our services, we do SEO and like content writing, like blog writing and stuff. And one of our customers is all like in the IT cybersecurity space. So I don't know much about the industry, but just through that work, I know a little bit about it. But you shared a couple of things that have stood out to me. One was, I think it was like the time it takes to crack a password and how that's changed over like the last 10 years.
So
it's crazy.
So there is an organization that does a test. They use a simple $2,000 computer, like you can buy at Best Buy, $2,000. And then, so they take like 8 characters and longer, like uppercase, lowercase. And then, so 2020 to crack a 8 character password was.
This is 2020. This is
2020.
Only 4 years ago.
4 years ago was 8 hours, right? And a basic uppercase, lowercase, special characters was 8 hours. 2023, we are at, I think it was like, what, 10, 15 seconds, something like that? We are like into the seconds.
Yeah, a fraction.
Fractions. Like, and people is like, oh man, this is like NSA level computer. I'm like, actually, it's not. That's a $2,000 computer that you can buy in any store. Graphic cards are a great processing power, and they use cracked password. I tell people, you need to use as the longest password your portal application allow you to use. Like, tell today, you can go any lower than 12 characters, uppercase, lowercase. And I think one of the biggest tips I give people is like these two special characters, the backslash and the question mark. I call like they're superfood. Like they're like super characters that the moment you put them in a password,
interesting,
you literally tenfold the strength of a password. The reason is backslash and question marks in the programming world. Backslash is a show like pointed directory, and question mark is a query. So a lot of platforms cannot handle these characters. Mm. So I did an experiment for another speak. So we took the password 8 times, the letter Z, like Z, 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 8 times.
Yeah.
Put in the engine, 3 seconds to crack the password. I took 3 characters out, put backslash and question mark, still 8 characters. We went from like 5 seconds to 30 days. The same 8 characters, but I just changed the letter to backslash and question mark. Can you imagine this thing in 12 or 16 characters? And this is very simple. I see people like, oh, I have like 30 characters, but they're just all words, like, or basic characters. I'm like, don't. Here's some tips.
So what I'm hearing is we're past the stage of like password being like, you know, Blake and Joy 123 and like our wedding day.
No. So here's a two fun facts. So first of all, 93% of people use 3 passwords in 9 different variations. They just usually change the front or the back letters. 93% of people. And they use this thing about, they use the same password for their social media or in banking. So it gives you the gate for that. Another thing you see now, especially with taxes.
I feel seen. I feel attacked.
It's pretty bad, I'm telling you. And then another thing that you see, there's something called the OSNET, like open source intelligence. This is how scammers collect information about you. So you'll see all these like quote unquote challenges on Facebook. hey, 20 questions about you, the city where you're born, how old is your, what's the dog name, the school, what's your hobbies? Guess what? Like people is like, oh yeah, I'll give you my.
This is fun.
Yeah, yeah. This is fun. And it's, and you see this chance, they come every few months. And I'm like, the ring of people, the, of groups that run this thing are actually scammers because they collect information based on what you give them.
Wow.
They combine with your information from Facebook, LinkedIn, other social media, and then they build your digital profile, and based on that, they can hack your account. They can.
Well, they probably get like those secret questions too, like this, you know, it's like security questions.
So people like, oh, my dog name, stuff like that. And when you have this on social media, people is like, you just gave all your answers on an open platform, and that's it. So this is how scammers collect and create your digital identity.
Well, we're getting to the point, you know, the passwords need to be longer. They need more special characters. Is like Google Password Manager, is that secure? Like, is that, because like I'm trying to understand, like, functionally, how do I have like 30 different passwords and keep track of everything?
So there is a tool, it's called Password Managers. There is a bunch of them on the market. We recommend two of them. The first one is called Nord Password.
It's the same company as NordVPN?
Yep, okay. Same company. Another one is called 1Password.
Okay.
There are the two safest ones that we know of. They're also platform agnostic, so they work Mac, PC, Windows, Chromebook, Android, and iOS, no problem. And the way that they encrypt the keys is like very secure, contrary to, let's say, LastPass. Everybody knows LastPass.
Yeah, I know
but
LastPass.
They got hacked 4 times in the last 2 years.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is what I use LastPass.
God knows how many people we migrated from LastPass to 1Password.
Yeah, wow.
But when you think about it, when you have a password manager, you need to create a very, very secure password to just open the vault. And then inside the vault, you can keep whatever you want. Like, I'll give an example. Like, my vault right now has 700 passwords in it. But I only want to remember one. That's it.
Yeah.
And then you let the program generate crazy random batshit long password. Like, our banking Office 365 accounts, we use 50 characters.
Yeah.
Now, God forbid I have to type this thing, I'm in trouble, right? But I have 1Password to open the vault, and then it literally fills up everything. And this is where you make it secure. You make it randomized for different banks account, social media. God knows how many times we see people that lose their business Facebook page because their Facebook password is very simple. And then people lose it. Yes.
Young moving companies
had the same issues. Yeah. After 10 years of having this profile, they lost it.
Lost the whole thing.
And then you cannot retrieve it. You can open a case with Facebook, and then it happens a lot with social media, LinkedIn.
Yeah, right.
You need a very strong password for your social media because this is one of your main assets. This is your brand and name.
Right.
People is like, use the same password, very simple password, because they want to type it everywhere. On the other hand, it's the same password they use for the bank. Guess what? After that, there is a lot of problems after that. So people are not aware, like your business profile, Google My Business, Facebook, Instagram, whatever you have it, it needs to be separate passwords. They need to be a very secure password because if you lose an asset, we had a client that asked us, they mingled their password for Google My Business. And you know exactly how critical Google My Business is. It was almost like, it took them 3.5 months to retrieve their account. They were lucky to get it back. That was their name, their phone number, the link. They completely got scammed out of this thing, Google My Business.
And that's what I was going to ask you is, it feels like small business owners have a hard time seeing the value of cybersecurity. It's like, oh, I'm too small. Like, who's going to care about me? I'm too small of a business. But yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I've seen some small businesses, and think about for our listeners, I mean, think about how hard you've worked to get all your Google reviews and build up that profile. Or if it's like Erica's company, you know, you have a Facebook profile with hundreds of customers.
That was 10 years old.
Yeah.
Oh man, they had like over 5,000 reviews over there. That was like nuts.
It's just gone, you know, which.
Can imagine that.
I mean, I you know, I feel bad that I'm sure she doesn't like that we're talking about it, and she feels bad about it too.
It's a fact, but it's a fact. I mean, it does happen. You hear only on the big ones. 63% of small businesses that they had a data breach or had a cyber crime go under 6 months later.
Ooh, wow.
That's a huge number because people think, I don't have anything that, it's like, that's not correct. You have your financial information, you have client information.
Wow.
And in certain fields, like, you know, like financial or medical fields, your liability is through the roof. Like, for example, if you have a medical facility or clinic and you get a breach, by law, you have to report to the authorities. You need to report the FBI, and you need to give all your patients 2-year credit and identity monitoring. and you need to report it in a newsletter. Guess what? If you do that, you're literally going to lose your business because nobody's going to come back to you, right? You'll be surprised how many medical facilities that got breached never report that because you're going to lose it. That's the thing. Everybody has something to lose. Everybody. It doesn't matter if you're a one-man shop or you're a $100 billion company. It's just different value, different assets, your information. So people are like, oh, I can't afford your services. I'm like, you know what? Just talk to someone. Get some consulting. We have a complimentary consulting. Give you some tips and advice. We always talk about it. Here's a few steps you can take to protect your business. At least have a good start. Have the right tools to start. The moment you are aware of that, at least you know, here's the next steps I need to do. I can save the money for that, but at least you know it's there, how to protect your business.
Do you feel like with the rise of AI, has that like changed the rules? I mean, is this wild? That's a
That's not just hot potato. That's a whole sack of potatoes for us. So people is like, oh yeah, it's great. The best thing in the world since sliced bread. AI is a great tool for content creators right now, for articles, anything. It's amazing. But here's what we see from cybercrime. Right now, AI, we're losing to AI. Here's what's happening. One of the biggest vector of attacks we see, it's called BEC, Business Email Compromise. Phishing. Phishing and spam emails, still the king. Now with AI, we see perfect emails. There is no more grammar, language, the thing. The links are legit. Everything is amazing, right? They can pass all the filters. People create amazing code. Here's a fun fact for you. ChatGPT, OpenAI, they did a white paper research. They took 100 biology students, master and PhD students, and asked ChatGPT to write biological weapon. Here's the tip. They didn't publish the article. Want to know why? I'll let you guess why. That's the thing. We see hackers use ChatGPT to write ransomware code. They give you, here's what I need. Here's my criteria. Here's deployment. Write me the code. And then in like 5 minutes, you have a ransomware code ready to be deployed. This is how crazy it is.
It is interesting too. I mean, and for listeners on the podcast, I mean, they've heard me talk about a lot of the negatives of AI. And I feel like I always have to balance and be like, I have a OpenAI premium subscription. I don't hate ChatGPT.
It's a great tool.
It is. It is a great tool. But it's amazing how, like, for example, I was trying to figure out how to do something on Adobe After Effects, which I don't know anything about the program. And I literally was like, hey, this is what I'm trying to do. Give me a step-by-step way of navigating Adobe After Effects. And it gave me like 15 steps and it literally was exactly what I needed.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
So there is this interesting, like, you know, it's amazing what it can teach you and do for you. Yes. And it's definitely got me curious about, from a cybersecurity perspective.
Right now, we are losing the battle against AI until we get some AI tools that will help us, but a little bit. The good AI or the machine learning behind it, right? I mean, there are a lot of companies utilize that. We start seeing the trickle now into our platforms, but right now, hackers are literally celebrating and dancing on AI. Yeah. That's notorious right now.
Well, Galico, we're out of time. This has been a great episode, man. I've had a lot of fun.
Thank you.
For people listening, how can they connect with you?
Probably the best way, it's apolloitservices.com. Our local number here in NWA is 479-553-9940. Or you can look for us on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Google My Business. Again, apolloitservices.com. We are here to help you and just give us a call. We'll give you some help, tips. You don't have to be an enterprise or Fortune 500 company to use our service.
Yeah. Well, Galico, thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Absolutely,
I appreciate
it. Thank you.
Hey, for our listeners, I'll put the link to Galico's website, Apollo IT Services, on the episode description so you can check that out. If you're a first-time listener and you enjoy the podcast, what the heck are you waiting on? Click the subscribe or follow button so you can keep getting good advice wherever you are. We're bringing good advice to you 2 or 3 times a week, every week, so make sure you're staying tuned to that. Thank you for all of you who've been supporting the podcast and listening to it long-term. I so appreciate you. That's today's good advice. We'll catch you later. See ya.